Once before, the Akaya contacts began secretly within a very small closed group there. A similar program of contacts began near Bogota, Colombia. The Bogota contacts came to light outside the local group there in Colombia a little over a year after the Meyer contacts in Switzerland had begun in January of 1975. And the parties to the Colombian case knew nothing of Meyer, and the Swiss group had never heard of the activities halfway around the world in Colombia. They might as well have been living on two different worlds. Nothing at the time had been released on the Akaya contacts until late 1975, after the witness had been aboard the spacecraft several times and had come to accept this new reality himself. And then he confided the phenomenal information only to a very few trusted confidants. Now, I want to point out something here. The big excuse that they have for not sharing UFO information with us is that people would commit suicide. This is total baloney. This man rode on the spaceship several times and accepted it as the new reality. That's what it says here. And I think that is the normal response. I think that was the response of the Mayans when they had contact with aliens who gave them zero and the Mayan calendar and made many predictions about the future, especially astronomical predictions about eclipses and that sort of thing. It is a lame excuse that people will commit suicide. There is a claim that people committed suicide in 1939 when Orson Welles did his invasion from Mars. But people committed suicide yesterday, and it has nothing whatsoever to do with the invasion from Mars by a science fiction writer. It has to do with whatever problems they had in their life and whatever reasons they had for checking out. It is also obvious that the aliens are now contacting common people directly rather than trusting government. I think not trusting government is wise. And every time you get a chance to vote against someone, do it. For me, none of the above is always the best choice. I would rather have nobody in power than to have somebody who betrays us in power, lies to us, feeds us propaganda, tries to control us, and turn us into slaves. The UFO cosmonauts contacting the Colombians told that group that they come from what we call the Pleiades. To those there involved, these new contacts were so mind-boggling and so profound and so far exceeded their internal knowledge of what was going on elsewhere in the world that they carefully guarded their secret with their own immediate circle for 3 years, and then only confided it to very trusted friends in UFO research also. None of them or their friends had ever heard of Edward Meyer. Those in Switzerland, on the other hand, now conducted themselves in a similar fashion. Stranger still, the Pleiadians in neither case made any mention of contacts with the other groups of terrestrials, and they even used different styles of equipment and spacecraft, although at the same time there were once similarities in some respects. They have to be from different planets, different star systems. Both groups used a variety of spacecraft for different functions. Both the Swiss and Colombian contactors employed part organic, part mechanical creatures in labor operations aboard the spacecraft, and both used a large mother ship in space as an operating base. Both had similar technological wonders aboard the spacecraft that came to the surface of our planet, and in both cases the environment aboard the mothership was 99% recyclable and almost perfectly efficient, and the occupants lived long lives by our standards. In both cases, the cosmonauts seemed to be fully aware of the ancient history of our Earth. The Colombian story is briefly as follows. Engineer Enrique Castillo Rincon, president of the Instituto Colombiano de Investigaciones de Fenómenos Extraterrestres, conferee and delegate to the Unidentified Flying Objects Investigative Organization and president of Colombia with home offices in Bogota, got off the bus more than 150 kilometers from the capital. It was about 20 in the evening, which is 8 o'clock, 8 p.m., on Saturday, the 3rd of November, 1973. Now, the writer has made an error here in his sentence. He says that Mr. Rincon was president of Colombia. I think what he meant to say was he was president of the organization, Flying Objects Investigative Organization, and their president. And this group is of Colombia. I was trained on South Campus, preparing to become a doctor. Wendell Stevens was trained in the military, and I think that it's obvious that he was not careful about what he was doing. In medicine, you have to be extremely careful, and you won't even get into a medical school unless you're extremely careful. Next card. This was near the appointed place. He had been told to carry nothing that could cause harm or damage to anyone or anything. He had arrived a little in advance of the appointed time because he had to walk a ways around a small lake and he didn't want to be late. He was wearing a ruana, a kind of poncho, and a sombrero. He arrived at the site that had been designated before this appointed time. He had been given his instructions in a communication prior to embarking on this trip. When he arrived near the lake, everything was familiar to him, as if he had been there before, as if he were now reliving something he had already done before. And he could see the place that would be marked by the metal sphere, placed there to guide him. He thought, "Good, this is the place." I arrived with great anticipation, Enrique recalled, and walking too close to the lake, stepped in the water up to my knees. It was very cold. In Bogota, our study group was meditating at this very moment. They were praying that all would work out well in my anticipated meeting with the spacecraft. There were more than 30 others in this study group in Bogota who had developed a voice channel contact some time before a communicator who said he was a visitor from another planet to Earth. A number of voice channel recordings were made, and many questions were asked and answered. In response to a request for a more direct face-to-face meeting, the group was invited to choose one member from among them to represent them in such a meeting. They had chosen Rincon, leaving their channel with the group in meditation in Bogota. So I forged ahead. I came to the small metal sphere in the exact site described. I remember having seen my preview of this scene, a woman with a child in her arms and a burro carrying some wood, and two dogs and another child walking along beside. So I waited. Sure enough, they were there too. They looked at me a little strangely, but continued walking, and I continued walking normally also. I arrived at the point where I could see the two clumps of trees exactly as I had seen in the preview some time before. I did not know which was the intended one, so I picked up the sphere and went into the nearest aunt, whatever that is, thinking, since I had the sphere, they would know where I went. The sphere became activated and began to heat up. It was about the size of a golf ball and was full of small holes. As soon as I took it into my hands, it began to heat up, and small rays of light shot out the holes. It got so hot that I had to hold it with the point of my poncho to carry it. I had the impression that it was something like a compass, but it did not have any needle or anything else. It was just a metallic sphere of some material like stainless steel. And it was hot, hot, hot. This is Chapter 7, Part 2. I went into the clump of trees, remembering mentally that over there was where I had seen a clearing. I reached it at about 10 minutes after 8 p.m. I was 10 minutes late and worried about this. I still had the sphere in my hands, and I looked around me, but didn't see anything unusual. I looked up and saw only branches and leaves. Then I heard something like a distant boat motor, which was lost in the distance. I waited in the woods as the minutes passed, terribly slowly. I looked at my watch, and it was now 2015. I thought, "Dear God, what is going to happen? Protect me in any case." I began to feel fear. It gave me a sincere fright. There I was, representing all the people who were praying for me and thinking of backing out. I decided I would not give up. At 20:25, I began to hear a tremendous noise. I was in the woods and could not tell where it was coming from. Suddenly, the whole area was illuminated brilliantly. Two huge craft approached and passed directly over me. They came streaming water as if they had come from the bottom of the lake. Water cascaded from the sides like from a submarine when it surfaces. I waited breathless as I watched. They flew over me and the whole area warmed up from the heat. They must have put out a tremendous amount of energy. These craft were flattened disc forms, and underneath I could see something that rotated. And below that, I saw three large white round parts that turned slowly, and a colored light came out. These giant objects, such tremendous spectacle, gave me new cause for alarm. And then it fell silent. I could only hear a very low sound dying down. They hung there in the sky, about 100 meters between the two, as best I could calculate. These objects were shaped like huge soup plates, joined at the rims. They were about 45 meters in diameter, and about 12 meters from top to bottom. I could see the cupola on top very clearly. The light slowly dimmed down, leaving only a small bright light source illuminated. It lighted only the area directly under the craft. Then one of the ships began to approach. The other remained quietly in place. It gave me a new fright to see this tremendous monster so close, and then it stopped, suspended above the small stream there, and two lateral beams of light came on. These new beams shined down, and I saw two beings descending in them as in an elevator. Wow, a beam of light elevator. In their descent, they disappeared behind the trees from my position, and I couldn't see them land. Then I heard their steps as they approached. At this moment, all of the lights on the spacecraft went out, and they remained completely silent. After seeing the tremendous luminosity, bright as day, I couldn't see anything when the light went out. And then I heard the steps of the beings, and then I saw them at 10 meters away. They approached, separated, one from the other. They wore helmets and suits that seemed very fitted, and I could see them clearly as they neared me. Then I heard the first telepathic communication. Brother, we are here. Do not fear. Ooh. We are your friends. They tried to coordinate my ideas and thought. Yes, why not? I am not afraid. He peed his pants, that's all. Then I heard the voice say, I am your friend, Enrique. Do not be afraid. I shook my head. I'm not afraid. I could see that they were tall, more than 1.70 meters in stature. That's not very tall. When they came up to within 2 meters of me, he said, I am your friend. Do not be afraid. I said, yes. And the other said, if you are not ready, we can suspend this until another day. If you are not afraid, we can continue this contact, and we may ascend aboard. Oh, boy. I said I was ready, and I took a step forward so that they could see that I had lost my fear. They noticed that I was a little wary, and one of them took me by the hand and the other by my shoulder and said, walk with us up to the light. We went a few meters forward, and one of them said, straight ahead, you feel a little worry in your head and in your body, but nothing is going to happen to you. The other said, Brother Enrique, we guarantee it. We do not want to cause you any harm. And then they ate him. Moreover, if you are still afraid, you may return, and we will prepare this for another day. I could not see their faces for the helmets. I asked if the helmets had visors, and a form of visor raised a little in front of one, showing the nose and mouth, but partly covering the mouth, which had a rectangular shape. I could not see the Mamaluco spacesuit well because of the dark, and I could not see up to now exactly what color they were. Then they stopped me and said they could sense a little worry. He was terrified. At that moment, the spacecraft came forward and flashed a ray of light. I felt tremendous thrills and some twitching in all the skin of my head, like needles pricking me. I stood erect and began to ascend. When I saw that I was leaving the trees below, I thought, what if I should fall? I continued to ascend like in an elevator. I was surrounded by a yellowish light. It gave me the impression of being solid. I tried to touch it with my hands, and it felt solid like crystal. It must have been only energy because I did not see crystal. I didn't see anything. But when I touched the light, it felt solid. I felt a thump, and then a port began to open. And there it was, fully open, and I was inside, and it closed. A moment later, the other two entered, removed their helmet, and smiled. They had taken their helmets off so I could see their faces. They asked me for the sphere, which I gave them. And then they said, wait here. Take off your clothes. And I took everything off. They opened an automatic port and we entered. Then they opened a side port like a window and looked at me smiling. I don't like to get naked in front of aliens. I heard a voice say, don't be afraid, we're going to enter a little smoke. But this is necessary. Do not be afraid. In spite of their assurances, I associated this immediately with the Nazis gassing the Jews. Wow. I did not see where the smoke came from, but it came in and it smelled like lemon. It only lasted a minute and was then drawn out through some rectangular openings in the wall and disappeared. Then I noticed that there was no shadow from my body anywhere, and I thought, where's the light coming from? I could not see any lamps. Then they gave me my clothes, which I put on, leaving the ruana and sombrero aside. They opened a door and said, now you may proceed. They explained that the process was simply to disinfect everything from whatever microbes we may have brought from the Earth's surface. I went into the first compartment that they opened, and there were four persons seated there, waiting for me. I came to the first one and he said, Enrique, how are you? And gave me his hand. He gave me his hand like we shake hands and said, how are you, brother? I am going to shake your hand, said another. This, indicating the first, is the commander. He said his name was what sounded like Kramish. I gave him my hand and he gave me some thumps on it. The rest greeted me this way also. The only one who did not give me his hand was the first who had said, Brother Enrique. He now turned to me and said, I am Cyril. I said, how are you, Cyril? And he said, Cyril Weiss. Remember in 1969 in Caracas, Venezuela, at the entrance to the theater, when we met? And I said, Cyril Weiss. Oh, Cyril Weiss, but you are a little changed. And what are you doing here? And he said, I am one of the crew of this ship. I was terribly surprised. He said, we have been in contact with you for 8 years. I understood now why they had given me their hands like Terrans. Then he presented me to the others. There was one by the name of Kremakon, and another named Krulula and Krenza. And then he told me that his name was not Cyril, but Krishnamurk. The name sounded Hindu. They all spoke telepathically except the one who spoke first, who articulated words to me in perfect Spanish. They seated me there at a table, as of crystal, with seats of material like plastic, with a leather-like finish. The beings were all dressed alike, except they had two types of suits. Some wore a silver-colored outfit, and the others had suits of a Coca-Cola color. There were others who had similar suits, in a dark gray color, with orange gauntlets and orange boots. Flashy dressers. One of them took off his gauntlet so I could see his hands, which were perfectly formed. Their faces were beautiful and without blemishes and imperfections, but clean like a child. Their hair was long, coming almost to their shoulders. Kramakon told me that he is the commander of that ship and that there are 12 crew members. They are making contacts in order to divulge to them clearly what is going to happen on this earth. I asked him what kind of contacts, and he said, men like you. He didn't say more on this, and I did not pursue the subject further. I then asked him if they had women aboard, and he said, "Yes, we have women with us, but at the moment we will not see them." Then I remembered that he could read my thoughts before I asked the question, and knew I was going to ask it before I even formed the words. We began with the first questions. I had brought many questions given to me by the study group. Almost all of them were of a religious nature. I did not want to ask those at this time. I began by asking them where they were going to get their contacts and why they had chosen me. They told me that my name was not really Enrique.
Ooh.
They told me another name, which I still have revealed to nobody. Heathcliff, maybe? I am waiting to see what develops in all of this first. I got the impression that they knew something about previous incarnations of mine for some reason. I asked then where they came from, and they replied, the Pleiades. I asked them, where are the Pleiades? And they said, it is what you call the Seven Sisters. And then I remembered that it is a small constellation having seven bright stars. I asked them how far it was from here, and they said, you say that it is more than 328 light years from here, which is not true. It's much farther. So I asked them, how did you make the trip? Perhaps I was asking them infantile questions, but for me they were important. How did you make such a long trip? They answered, do you know anything about relativity? They told me that Albert Einstein's theory was not complete, that we are going to have to make three corrections, that the velocity of light is not, in fact, 300,000 kilometers per second, as we believe, but much more. And they went on to explain details that I could not follow. Well, is it written down anywhere? I'd like to read it. Maybe I can follow it. Then they told me there is another measure of time, unknown to us, in which we cannot remain long in physical bodies. I did not pursue this further after that. They took me to visit various rooms. I saw a room for meditation. They said it was where they rest and meditate. It was beautifully appointed, with tremendously exquisite brocades. Another room was a laboratory, where there were flasks of a green substance. I asked about this, and they said it was chlorophyll, which they had extracted from our trees, a substance vital to their own alimentary system. So they digest food with chlorophyll. They use it in preparing various food items. They had fruits also. They told me they ate much fruit from South America. They particularly liked the duraznos, peaches, and the melocotones, apricots. And they carried much fruit, corn, wheat, rice, and other vegetable substances. To compensate for what they had taken, they used an ionizing radiant beam that accelerated the life process of the plants and caused them to replace their fruit in a few hours. Wow. We gotta get one of those. I wonder if the cattle mutilators were as considerate. I didn't quite understand this, that they could project a radiation that could accelerate the growth and maturity of the plants from which they had taken produce and cause it to be replaced in hours. This was incredible. Tell me about it. I began to understand another thing. They knew about biological engineering and could control the genetic codes by means of a process which they called consubstantiation. By this process, they could continue the life forces of a cell forever. Now, we have to get one of those. They told me they were there on a mission. They belonged to a brotherhood of civilizations with others, from which they had received specific orders from our world. They pointed out that we have always been guided indirectly by certain great personalities who have passed through our civilizations throughout history. Those so-called masters, some approaching divinity, have always had contact with extraterrestrials. I had a feeling that these beings had been sent on a mission pertaining to the evolution of our planet. Then Kremakan, the commander, permitted me to visit the control room, where I saw great electronic maps on the wall. I saw the great panorama around us, through the green glass cupola. There were three men seated, And as we entered, they came over and greeted me, and then returned to the control panels of the craft. The control room was the third level, under the dome on top of this craft. When I saw the maps, he took me to them and explained that they were cosmic maps. I could not understand them. I saw small lights. They moved a control, and I saw small lights like neon, in various colors, beginning to take form on the map panel. There were points of light and lines of light, and some of the lines were indefinite. Some of the greater points of light represented galaxies and nebulosities. They said that many thousands of inhabited planets are in contact with each other and exchange cultural, technological, and scientific information. We have to get in on that. Some are tremendously advanced in spiritual and scientific evolution. I asked which planets, and he said it would be needless to tell me, as the names would mean nothing to me anyway. He told me that where the lines between the lights were brighter, there was regular commerce. These dimmer ones were under exploration. The indefinite ones were lesser developed. They were on the map, but they lacked thousands of years of development before they were ready for contact. Now I'm curious, where do we fit in? When are we going to join in the fun? They do have a sense of time because they talked of millions of years, but I had difficulty coordinating this with their discussion of laws of relativity, where time changes. Also, they seem to be aware of the future time, because they told me we are going to experience a third world war, and that they know exactly when it will start. I wish we could avert that, but we have crazy leaders. They desire that all men unite in one thought, to seek real peace for the whole planet, without distinction of race, creed, or color, that in the next few years we are going to make the greatest discovery in the history of the planet, the discovery of God, the final truth. But how is this possible, I said, if we already believe in God? Their answer was, you have never believed in God in a normal form. And I think I know what they meant. They called it a great unknowable, preferring to give the force no name. They told me that we have to distinguish between the inner and the outer forces. And I began to understand that we have searched for God outside when in reality it is within, and that the kingdom of God is in every one of us. We must understand this first before we will live in peace and understanding with all men. They told me that they were in a way emissaries of beings superior to them, and that they had been the destroyers of Sodom and Gomorrah. This gave me a great sensation. I said, how can you be judges? How can you destroy a nation with thousands of people, including many innocents? They said, you cannot comprehend this now. We will try to explain. We were emissaries of forces superior to us that govern the cosmos. And when they give us an order, we carry it out. And in the case of Sodom and Gomorrah, it was exactly that. They sent emissaries, they warned the people, and they refused to understand and would not believe that which was happening over their heads. The hour arrived and it had to be destroyed. I thought, how could they be the judges? And I said that I could not understand, that I would not go into detail, but that I also could not understand. For me, it was not important to know at that time, because there were other things. They told me the time of the beginning of the Third World War, and told me that they had been the inspirers and the consultants on the building of the Great Pyramids, where they have placed many years of the Earth's history. In the future, we are going to discover two cities in South America where there are the records of the origin of the Earth's races and how they came here, how the history was written, and why it was done. Would that be Brazil? They told me the time of the beginning of World War III and said that we could delay that time 3 or 4 years and its intensity by a condition of heart, that mankind alone could do this because they are not permitted to interfere with nor restrict the freedom of action of a civilization such as is developing here. I understood what they meant quite clearly, and didn't have to ask twice. They answered all my questions rapidly.
Seems he lost his fear.
When I asked them if we could go someplace, they said, "We're already traveling. From the moment you entered the craft, we have been traveling." They took me to a special panel there, like a great telescope, which I was allowed to look through. And it gave me the strange impression that I had gone out there into space, which was very still. There was no feeling of acceleration. It felt like the aircraft was standing still and not moving at all. I didn't hear any sound, and I couldn't detect the least movement. They seated me in front of a panel, which they opened and said, "Here is your house." We seemed stationary, some 5 to 10,000 meters above it, and they focused it into the telescope device. They said it was an electronic device, but it had to be very advanced over any electronic telescope of ours because it could penetrate walls and metals, and I could see my family sleeping. I asked them if we could look at something else, and the craft, which had been hovering over my house, now began to move about, and I looked at the two great avenues in the city, and I saw the autos and the people in the streets. Time passed and we talked much. I looked at my watch and had to look again. It read 20:25, almost 8:30 p.m. Krishnamurk said, "Your watch is not going to function until you leave this craft," and he laughed. I asked him what caused this, and he said, "Precisely when you came within the field of this craft and energy force, it stopped. It may not work again." They must have a different notion of time from ours, because I did not see clocks of any kind aboard. He just smiled and dropped the subject. I did not want to bother him about how long I had been aboard, as it did not matter anyway. He told me things about all our religions, which at this time I do not want to divulge. He told me something about the Fatima letter, which they seemed to know all about. At that time I understood, though, and I understood it also something that I had learned in a Mormon church, that hidden in the heart of all men are the great truths of all time, waiting to be awakened, and that this awakening must come from within. We talked about many other things that came to mind. They gave me a kind of chocolate bar sealed in plastic, which I opened and ate. Oh, you trust them. It had a taste like sabajon, a kind of mild liquor sold in Colombia, and my hunger disappeared completely. And then he said, "We have something that we want to give you that is very important." My body began to warm all over. "You're going to eat something very interesting, and which you will like very much." They brought me something like a large white corn taco and told me to eat it. I broke it and put some in my mouth. In a moment I felt a tremendous sensation and warm feeling. I thought at that moment that they were drugging me. I don't understand why the words Cyril and Krishnamurk are together. But Krishnamurk said, "Do you know what they call that? The Jews were fed on that for 40 years in the desert. The manna of the scriptures," I said. "No more, no less," was the reply. "You are eating manna, and you will not get hungry for 24 hours. It gives you tremendous energy. It is prepared for us." Then ideas began to rush into my head so fast I could not coordinate them. I thought of Elias and of Moses, and then I returned to the present. I felt like I was going crazy. They laughed and simply observed. We were one of those who helped the Jews. Our great ship was always camouflaged. They could be made invisible by a simple change of vibrational energy right over the heads of the people, and they could not see them. I couldn't understand this then, and I can't today. I have a little more knowledge about it now, but I still do not completely understand. The public has asked many questions, and I have tried to answer, but I must confess my ignorance concerning a civilization so advanced as this, and they were trying to simplify everything as much as possible so that I could understand it better. After eating the substance, it made me sleepy, and they let me sleep about 3 hours. Then they came and awakened me. I was lying on a very comfortable bed, and where I had been lying, I left the imprint of my body. "Pardon me, Enrique, you have awakened because we gave you a suggestion to awaken at this point. You are going to receive your last information, and it is time we left you in the place where we met you," a voice said. Kramakan had gone someplace and did not return. We circled the eastern plains, and they showed me a site that was illuminated like day. It was the site where we would next meet. Look well and observe the highway. Here we will meet again on the 18th of this month at 8 o'clock in the evening. They lowered the ship and passed slowly so that I could see the place well. I saw that the highway was long and ran through the mountains. I tried to remember all I could of the place, thinking I may have to come here by horse. They took me back and left me in the exact place where they had picked me up. They bid me goodbye with a form of embrace. With Cyril Weiss, I always talked in Spanish. The others bid me goodbye with strokes on my shoulder. "We will see you," Cyril said, and I descended to the ground. They let me off about 5 o'clock in the morning. I slept a little and awakened and saw that my watch was running and indicated 11:15. I left the place running as fast as I could. I wanted to tell the whole world what had happened. The first person I met was a farmer leading a burro. And I said, "Pardon me, sir, what time is it?" He replied, "Almost 8. 8 in the morning, sir." I calculated that I had slept about 3 hours. When I caught the bus at the road, I wanted to tell everybody. I wanted to tell the whole world what I had just lived. And I wanted to embrace all men. I was happy. When I returned to the house I had left the night before, I found some 60 people waiting for me. I met with the man who had made the telepathic contacts and began to give him the first information about the experience. I told him about the war and its timing and the great destruction and the great religious power around the earth and the years that remained of normal life. Nobody believed me, of course. They thought I was attacking religion and society for some reason of my own. I did not say much more then, nor ever in public, because I could see that it would cause confusion and possibly even harm. "Could you just tell us the date of the war?" I could only hope that someday all men would arrive at an understanding of the things I had just been shown. That is all that I can say about that first contact now.